them with you all today. I'm pleased to be here with you today and to be able to talk about one of my favorite topics. And that is, you know, how do we foster student engagement in online classes? I should be using the word remote. For a lot of us, it will be remote in the fall. But for a lot of us, the remote delivery will end up meaning some form of online learning delivery. To give you a little sense of my background and why I'm somebody to be talking to you about all of this, I've been teaching online now for more than 20 years. And it's also my research area. I was actually very fortunate that when I first started teaching, when I was a graduate student, I had the opportunity to teach my own class and have access to some really early online discussion tools, and to be taking classes as a graduate student where my professors were trying to use some of those same online learning tools. So I was experiencing all of this as a student and as an instructor simultaneously. And I would think about what was working and what was not working in the different settings, trying to find reasons for that. It actually became my dissertation topic, and still it started a whole career. So these are things I think about all the time. As I share with you today, please, as Lisa said, feel free to pop into the chat with anything along the way. I'm usually pretty good at tracking what's happening in the chat while I'm presenting, and if I miss something, I can catch up with that afterwards. Or perhaps somebody else who's monitoring will let me know. We have a large number of people on here, and I'm not going to be looking at all of you while I'm talking, so I may not see all of the hand raising as it happens. It's an awful lot to track, but Lisa, if you or Katie want to alert me if there's something like that going on, I'm happy to always pause and take a question, and we should have some time at the end for that as well. What I plan to talk to you about today is first getting into that mindset of what it's going to look like and what's necessary in order to foster student engagement in the online setting, then talking about how we create that overall culture, and finally a little bit about how we design for engagement. Now, you all come from a number of different fields, and you're going to be teaching classes that are a wide range of sizes and have varied learning outcomes, and that means that ultimately the solution for you is there are going to be so many different potential solutions for designing engaging class activities. I tried to create an experience for you this afternoon that doesn't really pigeonhole in one or the other, but instead that really gets you ready to apply concepts to whatever your specific teaching and learning situation is going to be. I have a few activities built in for you along the way, and those do include activities where we'll be able to jump out into other tools. Those of you who are joining on a phone might have a little bit of a challenge with some of that. It'll be easier if you're on a computer. I just wanted to be sure that you know that. These are things that you could, though, go check out later if you wanted to, so you could just take a moment to go get a drink or stretch your legs for a second, and we'll also debrief it a little bit, and I can screen share what's happening as well, so you can watch it in the more passive sense if your technology setup isn't such that that works for you today. But I tried to pick things that are very easy for everybody to do, both so that we could accomplish them during this workshop, but also so that you get a sense of what it's like if you ask your own students to do these kinds of things. Since there's always a little bit of a stumbling block when we ask people to do things. Okay, so look at that. There's nothing on that slide. This was actually intentional. The reason why I wanted to go to a blank slide, and in particular chose a black slide as opposed to any other color, is because it is a little bit jarring, isn't it? You're expecting something on your screen and you've got nothingness. It feels like the person in charge is not in charge anymore, and you wonder what's happening. This is what our students can feel like when they enter an online classroom if everything isn't all set up for them. They're pretty experienced with face-to-face classrooms. They, come in, they sit down, they tend to orient toward the front of the room because we've set it up pretty clearly that the instructor is going to come in and be in the front of the room, and they wait. It's the instructor's job to come in, you know, get everybody's attention, start talking, you know, run the projector, whatever's going to happen, but that's the instructor's job. When we do things online, though, sometimes we get to this equivalent of the blank screen. And nobody wants to be the one to take the first move. But as instructors, that's our job, to take that first move and to fill up that blank space that might be our Canvas shells, or it might be our Zoom, whatever else it is that we're doing. We're in charge of setting the tone for everything that's going to happen in our classes. And it's really important to remember that. I mean, this is a big difference between being face-to-face and being in an online setting. When we're face-to-face, you can kind of run with it in the moment. You know, even if you weren't really planned for that day, you can go in and say, hey guys, how you doing today? What's happening? And just get a conversation going. You're an expert, you can talk on your topic, right? It all works. But when somebody logs in online and you weren't prepared for them, and you weren't prepared for exactly what had to happen next, that's when the problems arise. So I put this slide up so you would get a little of that uneasy feeling that your students get sometimes online. Now let's go away from that uneasy feeling. Let's get to a better one. Okay, so I'm gonna start out right now with what is our mindset for online engagement? And this is all about helping our students know what the expectations are in our classroom and really setting the tone for our classes. There's a lot of literature that talks about the four roles that online instructors play. And you may not think of yourself as an instructor in all of these roles in a typical face-to-face class. You do play a lot of these roles, but let's walk through them one by one and we'll talk about why they're important. They're in alphabetical order here, but pedagogical, that's what we tend to think about. That's why we teach, because we love this stuff. We want our students to learn. But we're also managing the overall process. You may not always think about how you're managing that process in your classroom, but you are. Problems come up and you're the person who has to fix them. Even sometimes they're pedagogical problems that you have to fix. Let's say you put out a description for an assignment to your students and it wasn't clear. Then it's your job to figure out that it wasn't clear and to fix this. If you give them activity directions in the classroom that day, you know, the hands start going up. Exactly what did you want us to do? Well, it's really hard for them to do that online. So again, the managerial stuff you have to anticipate. There's the social component of it. Your students are used to things like showing up a few minutes before class and chatting with the person who sits next to them. They're used to who they see. They're not going to see all of those people unless you create a way for them to see those people and to connect with those other people in the online classroom. So it can be very isolating for people if you haven't anticipated all of that. The final one is technological, and that tends to make some of us uncomfortable because we think, well, we're not the tech experts, are we? But we're gonna be the first line of defense for our students in terms of technology. It's important to be ready for that. That doesn't mean that you have all of the answers. It means you know where to direct them. So have all of the IT support, you know, our IT people, Canvas folks, have all of that at the ready. And if you're going to ask your students to do something, you know, getting directions, looking online, there are a lot of tutorials. You don't have to build this yourself, but finding those things and linking them in so that any technology that you're using doesn't become a distraction to the pedagogical elements. That's all going to be really important. So these four roles that you play, being you know, the manager, the social director, and the technologist, in addition to being the teacher in the classroom, they have to come together to create this overall experience for your students. One of the big things, though, that I've been impressing on everybody, is this idea that the people have to come first, Your content will come second and the technology comes third. We will be using technology to deliver a lot of instruction and to engage our learners in the learning process. Note how I said that. I mean that very carefully. There's delivering instruction and there's engaging learners. Those are two different things. You know, watching a video lecture is not the most engaging thing. It's delivering instruction. It's delivering information. They also could have read it if you just gave them lecture notes to read, or you could have directed them to a textbook to get the same content. You know, that's just information delivery. But getting back to this idea of people first, content second, technology third, the technology is the foundation. It needs to work for us, but it also needs to not get in our way. You do not need to have the fanciest of tools. You can use, you know, the baseline stuff that we are being offered by FSU. You might opt to add in another tool if it suits your purposes for student engagement. And, you know, as I said, I'm going to share a few with you today, but don't let technology come to the forefront. Don't use so much of it that your students have their cognitive load diverted, where they're trying to figure out how to use the technology or which tool is it for this particular activity, instead of focusing on the learning content. Now, I didn't put the learning content first. I put the people first, because if your students aren't comfortable in the environment, if they're not comfortable interacting with you and they're not comfortable interacting with their fellow classmates, they're not going to do it. And that's going to be an impediment to getting that learning engagement going. So you have to attend to the needs of the people first. When all those needs are met, we can get to the content. And the technology is just going to be there to support us. We shouldn't even really be noticing the technology. We should have it working seamlessly for us. That technology is important, however, and that's with this idea of transactional distance. That's what we're fighting against. This is what so many folks haven't liked about going remote. And, you know, we can, you know, get this out of our systems if you want to. If any of you had a particular struggle with going remote that relates to this idea that you felt this loss from the classroom, go ahead and share it with us. Type it into the chat and you can see how you felt about it. Going remote can feel isolating. When we are face-to-face and having a conversation with somebody else, we see their facial expression, we see their body position, we hear their tone of voice. There are so many cues that we're getting from them, and that makes it a very rich experience. You know, right now on Zoom, you're at least getting part of this, right? You can hear my voice, you can see my face. It's not quite the same as live. There's a little bit more of a distance feeling in here. You know, you don't know if I'm wearing pants or if I'm wearing a skirt or a pajama bottom still, right? It could be anything. You don't have all of the information. Am I sitting crisscross applesauce and being totally casual? We just don't know these things. So there's been a dropout of some information. And I can't see all of you, right? I can see a number on there. There are 52 people here right now. But I can't see all of you, and I'm not getting all of that feedback that I normally get. So that creates a greater sense of transactional distance. If we move to something that's asynchronous, we're in Canvas, we're using discussion boards, we've just got words on a page. We don't know who these people are. And that can be really jarring for a lot of learners and for instructors too. And I see we have a comment here. You're teaching public speaking, thrown for a curve when you go online suddenly. Absolutely. That's really difficult to deal with. I would say that we have an advantage right now in the upcoming terms. And I've been talking about it to people as the difference that we have in disaster emergency response between response and recovery. Response is that immediate, oh my gosh, we have to figure out what to do in this moment to solve this problem. Moving ahead, we still have the problem, but we have a little bit of time to plan and to make a better solution for it. And that's going to be an advantage to all of us. We have time to think about these problems. And I can see here, yeah, you miss seeing people in your office, walking by, dropping by. We're missing all of that human contact we normally have. You know, your students may not come on camera if you're on Zoom, so you don't know, even if they're there sometimes, that can be a little bit difficult. You can't tell if they've got that confused look or if they've got that, you know how there's always that one student you look to in the class who's going, You're like, yes, I'm winning today because I see that. And it feels really good. Yeah, you just don't know all of these things. It's difficult, but there are ways to do this online. But and it comes back to us as instructors to set the tone for all of this. So I acknowledge and validate all of that for you. But I can tell you that I've been able to be quite successful with this online, and lots of people have, by thinking very carefully and setting the tone for the whole class. So, you know, engagement, what is that? If we go to a basic dictionary, then of course something you tell your students, never do this in a paper, please. But you know, it's useful to think about different definitions for a second. So engagement, to get and keep someone's attention. And that's like a baseline thing that we want to do in our classes. You know, we hope that if somebody shows up on Zoom, that they're going to stick with us the whole time and pay attention and absorb everything that's going on. But what are students actually doing or thinking about all of this? Let's look at some more definitions here. Engagement, let's look at the top one that's up here. An arrangement to meet or be present at a specified time and place. Have you had the experience before where your students have kind of said, well, I showed up, right? I showed up to class, I did my job. That's the end of that. They fulfilled the arrangement to meet at the specified time and place. That's not really participating in what's happening. I look at the next one that I've highlighted there, the emotional involvement or commitment. That's what we want, isn't it, as instructors? That's what I think about as engagement. I want my learners to do that. But I know that some of them are thinking about this as a time and a place that they have to show up. And if we've gone asynchronous, that's even more difficult. What is the time and place that we need to be there for? With that in mind, I want to share this with you, this little quote. This comes from some research that I did, and a student provided their feedback on online classes. Most students, including myself, we're most interested in how we do well in the class. I don't check to see if anybody responded to my posts. Think about that. Think about what they're saying. We're not concerned about others. It's an online class and requires little to no interaction with others and should stay that way. Oh, I don't like that as an instructor. I want to change that culture. But know that that's what your students are entering the situation with. That's what they have experienced. And that's what some of their online classes have been. So they believe that like online classes self-study. And some of them are like, that's cool. I'm not going to have to do anything else. And of course, some of them are saying, oh, I don't want to be online because I miss all of this stuff. Goes back to you. You have the opportunity. So what do? We need to think about classroom cultural shifts. We need to think about what everybody values. You know, what are the students going to value? Some of them are going to value that interaction, and some of them are going to be the ones who just want to show up. And you've got to try to change that for them. You've got to say that as a class, we value this kind of engagement. You've got to set the expectations for them. Tell them very concretely, this is how I expect you to engage. There are ways, especially if you're doing things asynchronously and using discussion boards and Canvas, where you can set and hold people to a certain amount of communication and expectations because you're not operating in real time. It's difficult if you've got, you know, 30, 40 students or more, and you have a 50-minute class to say, I want to hear from everybody, you know, and I'm going to check off that everybody showed up and said something. But I can make that expectation on a discussion board because time is no longer an issue. Space is not an issue. But we also need to give students examples because otherwise we could go back to that blank screen and they're sitting there going, oh, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? What does the instructor want? And you luck out in those cases if the first student or two who is bold enough to respond and provide that peer example does a great job. But what if the first student or two to respond does a lackluster job and there is no other example out there? That sets the bar low for the rest of the class. So you need to provide an example, just like they always ask you, is there a template for this? What's the rubric? You know, like even for the little interaction, sometimes you need to give that. And you need to give support for all of this. You know, so maybe you do give a little bit of a template the first week or two for what interaction looks like. Or you can get a student who you know is going to be reliable for you and you use them as as your example and get them to seed everything else for in the class for you. It does work rather nicely that way if you can do that. So how do we set the culture? Well, this is all about creating relationships with our students. And that's about trust and reciprocity. People don't want to share something of themselves if they don't think others are going to be sharing. And they don't want to share something of themselves if they don't feel that they're in a safe space for doing that. That goes back to your job as the instructor to do that. And I tend to talk about that in three ways. I think you need to consider all of these dimensions. It starts with identity. You know, just who is even in this class? In the face-to-face classroom, we look around. I find that students sometimes don't know each other's names in the face-to-face classroom, but they know a lot about each other. There's the girl with the great shoes. There's the guy who shows up 2 minutes late with a venti coffee every time. We know these things. There's you know, dude in the back row always. And you know, the person who's got their hand up first, all of these characteristics of people, even if we don't learn their names. We may give them little names in our head even, and we do it as instructors, although we learn their names, but their fellow students will do that. And they remember what each other has said. They develop a whole sense of these people. If we don't allow the time and the space for that to happen online, it just won't happen. It feels easy to skip over that. In a campus setting, when a class gets too large, we sometimes don't spend the time to do that. And we just say like, 50 people, we're not going to get past maybe a basic roll call on the first day, and then we can't deal with it. But again, online, you have the ability to do that without taking up too much of different people's time. And it's really important. It's also important, you know, I said, you set the tone for this, you model it. Your students want to know who you are. They need to build a sense of trust with you. So what you tell them about your identity, and it's not just, you know, here is my official title and all of my experience that makes me the right person to do this. But, you know, hey, look, this is me. So you all have gotten to meet me now for a little bit. You probably have figured out I'm somebody who smiles a fair amount. I love my subject matter. I get enthusiastic about it. And that's the kind of stuff that will help you feel safe, I hope, working with me and make you want to please me and perform well in my class. Join me in the enthusiasm for the subject matter. You know, that's on the instructor to set the tone for all of that and to model it. And then we get to presence. How do we all know that each other is there in the class? You know, sometimes instructors recede to the background, especially if you're teaching asynchronously in Canvas and it becomes all like, how do I just load up all of the materials? I'm going to record some lectures, got to make sure everything's running in Canvas. There's a lot to do in the gradebook. And there is. But if your students don't see you elsewhere in the class, so if you ask them to be on the discussion board, but they never get any acknowledgement that you have been there looking at what's happening on the discussion board, they lose some of their motivation to participate. They want to know that you're there. And then you're also responsible for setting the whole community and figuring out what the group identity of the class is going to be, giving the group a mission as learners to work together for the term, setting that sense of trust and reciprocity, making it a safe space, and giving responsibility to the students. And we're going to talk more about that, how you give some responsibility to the students in some of the upcoming slides. Okay, so with that in mind, introductions. I wanted to take a special moment to talk about introductions because of how important introductions are in a class. You can choose which way you want to do it. Text, if we're in Canvas, is the typical thing we'll do, is just open up a discussion board and ask everybody to introduce themselves. I like to use that for my first day attendance. And I'll tell everybody, you know, we have until Thursday to report it, so I'll tell everybody by Tuesday midnight, I expect that you have, if nothing else, posted an introduction to the class, to the discussion board. I'm going to show you a tool, and we'll play around in a second with video introductions, which can be another way of doing it. You might find that a little bit daunting if you have a huge class, because watching video can take a lot of time. But if you have a smaller class and you want to, or if you're planning on Zooming a lot and trying to get students engaged in conversation there, but you want to push the video introductions to be asynchronous, you might choose to use this tool. Think carefully about, you know, what do you want your students to tell you? What do you want to know about them? Because you have to ask. If you don't ask, they won't tell you. You will get very flat introductions. You know, I'm John Smith and I'm an economics major. It goes back to that modeling again. You model it. You tell all this stuff about you, and then they'll tell you stuff about them. Obviously, you don't tell them the stuff you don't want to tell them, but making yourself seem a little more human in the absence of all of these other cues about who you are helps to bridge that transactional distance. Responding to people, you know, welcoming them to the class, making connections is important. And that's one of the things the students will do. If you tell them, I expect you to respond to each other's introductions, find at least two people you have something in common with and connect with them, you're starting to build that community and the relationships that will carry on throughout the rest of class. And then it's also really important to learn about your students. As they've introduced themselves, now they're going to expect that you remember something about them. What you see at the bottom of the screen here is a sample, fake people, I've made them up, whoever has a roster with a perfectly alphabetical list like that, right? But I will make a table to try to keep track of who my students are and the things that they have told me so that I can make connections with them later in the term or be sensitive to certain things if I know that this is somebody who is really worried about learning online or if they have a major life event that's about to happen, something that they're struggling with. It becomes my little cheat sheet. You know, if you have a really large class and you have some assistants working with you, this is something that you can ask them to help you out with. You know, if you are a TA who is working for a large class, you might offer that this is something that you could do for the professor who's in charge. I bet they would appreciate it. But it is the best thing ever to have a cheat sheet about all of your students. So with that in mind, I'm going to give us a little activity now, and it's always, I always have a moment of pause in a workshop like this where we have a condensed amount of time and I'm asking people to do something with technology, but I'm going to give us about 10 minutes to play around on this activity. What I'm asking you to do is to use a tool called Flipgrid and to introduce yourself with video. This is a tool, by the way, that we have here at FSU with Canvas integration. So you can connect it right up to your Canvas shell if you want to. I'm not going to get into how to do that. It's honestly not very difficult to do that. But what it does is makes it seamless so that things that students do in Flipgrid can pop up in your gradebook as assignments. If you want to ask your students to do presentations, if you're used to doing in-class presentations, or like all of you public speaking folks who have jumped in here, this might be something that you want to try. So it's a video conversation tool. Students can record their own videos and then they can leave video comments for each other. And it's really fairly simple to use the tool. I'm gonna stop this screen share and get into another one just so I can show you what you'll get if you go there. And let's see, get back to, here we go. So this is what you will get to if you go here, and I just set this basic grid up, and you'll see there's some directions up.
What have you been doing all this time?
What? I'm sorry. Thought somebody was asking a question. So this is what you will get to if you go there. And I'm just asking you to say, who are you? What will you be teaching this fall? Or if you're not teaching, you know, how are you going to be supporting instruction? And what do you like best about teaching? And I've made one to start for you on here, my own little video. It's pretty simple. You just click the big green button there, and it will walk you through this. Now, because we are on Zoom right now, it could add a little conflict on some computers because your camera's doing one thing and now your computer's going to say, help, my camera can't do another thing. So if you feel the need to disconnect and come back, you can do that or shut your camera off in Zoom and then try to use this in Flipgrid. But you can try recording a brief video in here. You'll see I have a little a little fairy there sitting on my shoulder, because at the end you get to take a selfie and you can put stickers on it and text on it and have all sorts of fun. And I thought students would never do that. And then one day my grad students found it, and then they started like posing for pictures, like, and putting the stickers on there and doing all these really intentional things with it. And I mean, it was kind of fun and people enjoyed it and it shared their personality. It really livened up the class a little bit. So this is what we are going to be doing next. It's pretty simple. I will get back to the slide. Actually, I'm gonna put the URL here in the chat to make it easy for you. And it is currently, let's see, 3:38. So I'm going to give you until 3:50. That gives you 12 minutes. Play around with it. Leave your own. Watch what other people have said. Leave them some comments. And we'll come back and talk about it. Or go stretch your legs if you want to stretch your legs. I'm going to go get a glass of water. I had a setting toggled incorrectly on the Flipgrid, which prohibited you all from leaving comments. But I went and fixed that and it'll stay up. So if you want to go play with that, or sorry, from doing likes. So if you want to go back and like, you should be able to do liking at this point in time. There are a lot of settings there for instructors to play with in Flipgrid. But I hope you had a little bit of fun playing with Flipgrid. And, you know, again, it's the kind of thing where you can have more time later to go back and take a look at videos. I was enjoying watching some of the videos that popped up there and seeing some people who I recognized in the Flipgrid. So that was pretty nice as well. But it really is, you know, hopefully you saw it was pretty simple to, you know, just record your video. There's not a lot of difficulty in that. It's pretty simple to leave comments. And I saw that there were a few video comments that were left already. And now if you go back in there later on, you should be able to give people a like on their videos. Now that I have toggled the setting for that, it is possible to, yeah, Katie, thank you for putting so much information about Flipgrid into the chat. That's really helpful. There, you know, as an instructor, you can get in and play with all of the different features of Flipgrid and see how you can really control that setting for your students. You can leave some private feedback for all of them. But it's a great tool to use if you want your students to do presentations of some sort. They can record on the fly like that, or if they have the ability to do something more sophisticated, they can create their own videos and upload their videos into there. But then again, it also allows for that commenting to happen. And I find that that's really nice. I've been trying to have students do presentations online for 20 years. And there was a period of time before we had Canvas, we had Blackboard at FSU, where we'd have to have the students put their presentations up like as a link into Blackboard in a discussion forum. And then they'd watch them and they could go back on the discussion board and leave feedback for each other. And it just wasn't the same. It wasn't well integrated. And it's so much nicer to have video comments sitting on top of video comments. So it's just a fun little tool. And since we have the integration here at FSU, I do recommend checking it out if it sounds like something that would be well suited for your class. I'm gonna transition us now because I recognize we have a finite amount of time and I was trying to think about how much I could get in here for all of you, to thinking about what you do when you design engaging online activities. And again, I'm trying to shift your mindset a little bit into some of this stuff. It comes back to these four things I talked about before, the values and the expectations. So your values are going to show in what you've chosen to ask your students to do, your expectations in how you've written the assignment for them. The examples will be, you know, any way that you choose to model something for your students. And The supports that you give them could be, you know, the templates, extra guidelines that you provide for them. But when you fill in the information, the details about this kind of stuff, that's what helps your students be successful in your class and be engaged to the extent that they want to. And by the way, I know how frustrating it is as an online instructor, or really any kind of instructor, when you see students who aren't engaged. I recommend that when you look, you know, like in your dashboard or something, and you see that there are a couple of students who haven't done anything, well, first, it's an opportunity to reach out and see if they're okay. And that means a lot to say, I've noticed. Not I'm stalking you through the Canvas dashboard in a creepy way, but, you know, hey, I'm just keeping track. And do you need help? Can I help you in any way? That's really valuable to be able to do for your students. But do keep in mind that, you know, in a typical face-to-face classroom, there can be the people who are like this the whole time, leaning back in the back row of the room, and they seem like they're not really paying attention. It's that same thing. That's just the way that things shake out sometimes. We do the best that we can. I try to frame the idea of learning as a cognitive apprenticeship. And with that in mind, this is the cognitive apprenticeship model. I'm just going to walk you through it really fast because it helps you think about the ways that you can engage your students surrounding your learning content. And I see we do have a question here about, does Flipgrid have captions? Flipgrid will generate transcripts, and they're pretty decent too. So yeah, you'll have that. So with cognitive apprenticeship, we start with this idea of modeling. And I keep saying that, right? The instructor sets the tone. The instructor models what needs to be done. So we model for the students what we want them to do. Then we can offer coaching. Coaching is exactly what coaching sounds like, where you're offering little tips and tricks along the way. Scaffolding, just like the scaffolds on a building. They're not permanent, but we put scaffolds on the outside of a building during construction to help offer the necessary supports for the building while the rest of it is being constructed. We can scaffold learning for our students in much the same way. We provide the necessary supports while they focus on working with certain content or skills. Then we get to this idea of articulation. I am really big on using discussion boards in my classes. I like video too, but I find that too much video, it's hard. And it takes a lot of time. We read faster than we can watch videos. So I save videos for when it really matters. And the rest of the time, I will use discussion boards for my students to interact. And I think about this act of articulation that I'm requesting of my students. And think about how when you first started teaching something, it required that you knew it in a different way, more deeply than just, I read that and I think I understand it. You had to find the right words to explain it to somebody else. So that's a way of practicing your learning. The reflection, getting in, you know, deeper on, well, what does all of this mean for me? And am I able to use it effectively? What do I still need to do to learn more? And finally, exploration, where you take what you've learned and you're really able to use it somewhere else, transfer it, explore all of the extensions of it. Where your students are at in a classroom in terms of the cognitive apprenticeship can be all over the map. So you might have some students who are already quite advanced in working with the content area. So you might find that they're serving as peer models or peer coaches for each other. The act of articulation and reflection is the model for the next student, and getting that in place can be really great. So I've got a question about using discussion boards to a greater degree in asynchronous classes versus synchronous. I teach more asynchronous classes than I teach synchronous online classes. So I find myself going to discussion boards with text-based discussion as opposed to going to a video-based discussion. Some of the challenges that I find with doing things synchronously through video, through Zoom sessions like this, I mean, obviously today I'm trying to build in some interaction, but it's not the most interactive thing ever. Now, webinars tend to be that way. You ask somebody to come and give you a talk, and you're effectively asking them to disseminate some of their knowledge and then help you interact with it a little bit. But you know, Zoom can be difficult as in terms of trying to create a broad interaction space for a group of people. In fact, let me keep running through this and let's keep this in mind because I think we're going to come back to this concept in terms of student engagement and what that means. And my plan is to sort of jump a little bit around between synchronous and asynchronous. So there's this idea of owning space. And you know, whose space is the classroom? Whose space is the online classroom? Where do students have the ability to share? As a student, if you go into Canvas, there's nowhere for you to upload anything. As a student and you go into Zoom, the settings are probably such that you're not sharing your screen. You may find yourself muted by default. You may be asked to not have your camera on. Does the instructor accept people posting in chat or not? Are we allowed to have that kind of back channel or not? What are the spaces for students to be interactive in the class? And students don't know until you tell them, this is your space and I want you to interact in this. They don't know where or what they should share. They don't know when it's expected and they will wait for the direction. And if you don't tell them, then nothing's gonna happen. If they share and nothing happens, then they're less inclined to share the next time. So like, what happens if they share? Well, it could be that they're getting feedback from each other. So we think about the Flipgrid that we just posted in. And you know, if nobody responds to anybody else in that Flipgrid, then the next time I ask you to do a Flipgrid, are you going to want to do it? Or are you going to be motivated by getting some feedback from other people? Most people are going to be motivated by getting some feedback from other people. And so if they had a positive experience with the first time, then it'll happen the next time. Sometimes if they, you share, you do things, you get points for doing that. That's a motivator for some people as well. What happens if they don't share? If there are no consequences of not sharing, then people really aren't going to share. You'll see that drop off. I could go back to this idea of Flipgrid and the introduction. See, maybe somebody's not comfortable sharing in that way. If somebody in my class didn't share in that way, I might reach out to them and say, you know, hey, I noticed you didn't post an introduction. I missed you there. Would you like the opportunity to still do that? Or, did it somehow make you uncomfortable? If it made you uncomfortable, that's fine. And, we can talk about that. I'm not going to push you into doing something that's outside of your comfort zone. But, again, then that student knows that their contribution was missed. But, having these conversations and making your expectations explicit with your students is a big part of getting them engaged. So when I think about owning space, and I think about tools, like I just described it in Canvas. What is it like in Canvas? How do students share things in Canvas? So like, let's go to Canvas. Here's one of mine from this summer. And I've started a discussion topic for my students. And here you go and you reply. Well, who owns this space? The discussion starts when I start the discussion. And there are settings in Canvas where you can allow students to start their own discussions. Typically they don't. I've got, years and years of teaching graduate students who I invite to start their own discussion if they feel so moved, and by and large, they don't. Occasionally, I will find somebody who likes to start their own discussion, and then that person will do it. But usually, it doesn't lead to the rest of the class doing it. And the feeling that you have in a space like that, in a discussion board, is very much oriented toward the instructor. Who are you talking to? Who owns the space? Well, the instructor owns it. They set it up. They are grading you in it. They ask you a question and you're going to respond to that question. And that doesn't really create robust discussion either. It's a tension I'm always fighting against on discussion boards, that I have to start the discussion because nobody wants to get back. It's back to that blank screen at the beginning, right? I've tested this before with classes. I mean, I have been in the eighth or ninth week of the term with a class that really discusses, and I will tell my students things like a minimum of 4 posts per week. And I will have half of the class that posts 15 to 20 posts per week. because they are really engaged in it. But I have to work for that to happen. Otherwise, it will be very mechanical. If I said three posts, you give me three posts, exactly three posts. There are always the people who puzzle me. I still don't understand this one, where I'll say three posts and every week they give two. And like, really? That's just seems a little strange. But again, it is that instructor owned space. So unless as an instructor, you really do things to open it up to others, that in rich interaction isn't going to happen. If we look at the prompt that I have on here, and this is for graduate students, there's already an expectation for them to be, you know, interacting up at a certain level. We have already introduced ourselves, got a good sense of who each other is. So they've read some articles on research and publishing in the field. And now think about your dissertation. So what are your thoughts about the trends and how do your research interests fit in? Note that I'm asking you, not summarize what you read, but what do you think about this and how does it merge with your interests? I've just made it personal. So I'm inviting them to take over the space a little bit and make it theirs with their own information. Now, it still doesn't firmly become their space. And I'm not suggesting that you make this technological shift, but I just want to get you thinking in this other way for a sec. So what happens if you go with the blog? This is a student blog. The student has given me permission to share this as a screenshot. Somebody who's in my summer class where my students are blogging. And part of why we blog in this class is because it becomes the student space. Each student has their own blog and they own it, right? They decide what's going to be posted and everybody else reacts to them in comments. So whereas on the discussion board, I determine what the initial topics are, and everybody responds to my topics, and hopefully, and I give them explicit directions to respond to each other. In fact, I tell my students, you don't have to respond to my topic. My topic is the one to get the party started. After three or four people have come in, it's maybe not so interesting to respond to me as it is to respond to somebody else. So I'm just keeping you from having the blank page. But then take the conversation where you need to take it so that we can really get into the topic of this class. You know, with that in mind, you know, if I really want my students to just, you know, show me that they read and comprehended something, why would I ask them to do that on a discussion forum? Why wouldn't I just give them a little reading comprehension quiz and have them send that in to me personally and I'll check it off for everybody that they did it? You have to think about why it's of value for people to share with the class community and get feedback from the class community. Now, these blogs that my students do have become pretty amazing because they own their own space. It's hard at first, right? Like the first week or two, people are like, I don't know what to post. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do. I keep my own blog and I model it for them. And both through the things that I post and I write some meta pieces about what it feels like to post and what it feels like to have comments and to encourage them to interact with each other. So I'm really setting the stage with the values for my students and the expectations, and I'm giving them the example and supporting them with doing all of that. But as you explore different spaces that your students can interact in, or as you think about how you set up your spaces, again, you want the technology to be fairly seamless to students. And if you choose a tool, you don't want to, you choose a tool in the typical class. Unless the point of the class is to learn about all of the tools, then that changes things. But otherwise, you choose one tool for your students to use consistently throughout the term. Again, reducing the cognitive load for your students about how many tools they're going to use. And thank you, Kendra. It's great to see you in here today. And I have a lot of fun with that class. I love teaching it every summer. So with that in mind, I want us to play very quickly with another tool. This is another way of sharing space or giving students the ability to feel like they're putting out some top level posts. And I've used a tool here called Padlet. I have chosen Padlet because again, it is really easy to use. And today you're not going to need to do anything in order to log into this Padlet. You just need to go to the URL and actually, Katie, could you do me a favor and type the URL into the chat for everybody so that they can just click on it and get over there? So on the Padlet, and that's what you see as a screenshot of it, you're just going to add a note to the Padlet by clicking that little plus sign in the bottom right corner. And you can read what other people have posted on there. And if you want to give them a like on there, it should be set up so that you can give them a like. Simple tool, you'll see that I put something up on there already. And that again goes back to this idea that nobody likes a blank page. So if you set this up, you want to put something on there initially, or get your best helper student to put something on there initially for you so that students don't get to a blank page. So go ahead and click on over, and we will give ourselves about 5 minutes to do this. So the time right now is 4:09. So say come back at 4:14. Now that will be very precise about this. So go over to Padlet, have fun with it, and I'll talk to you again in a sec. Those weird transactional distance things, because I can't immediately see that everybody is back here with me, but I, I see a couple of you are chatting about this as well. And I've been watching things popping up in the Padlet, and I have a few comments that I wanted to make. You have the opportunity, if you set up a Padlet, to set it up in different ways. So I just have it up as a generic sticky board right now. There are ways in there that it can be set up so that there are replies to posts. There is a question about moderation. Absolutely, you can moderate it. And there is a setting in there where if somebody tries to post an inappropriate word, that it is supposed to put in a happy emoji of some sort. I did not actually test that, and I've not used the setting, but nonetheless, the setting is supposed to be there. I think we got a really good question on there, which is like, how do we get people to do things without points? Because it does get a little exhausting as an instructor, doesn't it? When it's like, do I have to give you points for every little thing that you did? One of the things that I like to do as an instructor, what I want is people to be participating in a more general sense without me having to, count points and do all that, is I work in some sort of a portfolio assignment, and I ask my students, I give them a lot of opportunities to engage and be present in the course, and I ask them to be adult learners and to choose the ones that are most meaningful to them. Then I have them create a little portfolio for me at the end of the term, telling me what they did in that realm, giving me documentation, like grab screenshots of the things that you did. I was like, be a helper. If you see an opportunity for something in the class, then go ahead and help with that. Offer up your services with that. Again, you're still going to have, 5 to 10% that are lagging behind, that are choosing to not really engage with all of that. But you'll also find that some of your students will then take the liberty to be like, oh, really? You want a helper? Great. And they will take off and do some really amazing things. I mean, the stuff my students do, just it makes me so happy to see all of that. And then I think, would it happen if I didn't invite it, if I didn't give them the space and tell them that it was theirs to do it and that I valued it? And once a few students start to do it, that peer modeling effect takes over, and others become more likely to do something like that. Padlet does operate kind of like an online parking lot. And so it can be great if you want to have brainstorming. You can set it up so that people's names show up or that they don't show up. So you can think about whether it's important for people to have names attached or if it's going to be anonymous. There are a lot of options based on how you set things up on there. Another thing I wanted to be sure to work in, based on some of the comments that I had seen on Padlet, was that this idea that you can also give your students personal feedback and let them know that you're so happy to see them doing things or that you miss them. You can do that. I like to write check-in emails to my students, sometimes once a term, sometimes twice a term, depending on what's happening. And I write a generic email, and then I personalize it in bits and pieces as necessary for different students. There might be a whole bunch of the class that just gets the generic version, and it really doesn't take me very long to send that email out. I always ask for everybody to reply. Even if you're doing okay, just say okay. And then I know, and I check you off my list as somebody who's doing okay. But it opens up the conversations, and it's the stuff that you hear then is, even in a non-COVID time, just regularly is, something happened and I fell behind and I just didn't know how to catch up. I wanted to reach out, but I wasn't sure. I'm so glad to hear from you. So it really becomes a great opportunity for you to offer your students the help that they need. But sometimes you have to be the one who reaches out to them first. So that's this idea of owning space for an activity. And there's another one. I'm not going to have us jump over there and play with it. But you all should, and this is being recorded. You can always go there later. This is something you'd have to log in and create an account. So it's a little more of a load, but it's a tool called Digo, and it allows people to share bookmarks and then comment on them. You can even have little discussions around them. So if you have the kind of class where people could find resources online, this is a nice place for them to share them with the rest of the class. And I've got this space set up so that you can go on in if you want to later on and click on join this group and go in and play around with it. That's what I set this particular group up for. So have at it if you want to. Now, I've been talking about owning space, but I also want to address this one, owning silence, right? Whose silence is it when we have silence in a class? It really depends on how you've set things up. It comes back to everybody's going to look at the instructor to be filling the silence in a space. And if we, think about what it's like when we're in a face-to-face classroom, here we are, a lecture hall, got the microphone, the implication is there that the person at the front of the room is the one who is speaking. It is their space and it is their silence. The only way that it can become somebody else's silence is if you give it to them. And to give it to them, and this picture is kind of what we want to see, right? We want our students engaged with each other in some sort of discussion. And you can picture here the instructor standing off to the side and just letting the students talk to each other. But we have to tell students that that's what's going to happen. So what you have to do in Zoom is something like this. I could give the silence to you right now. And I can say, okay, I'm going to give you 90 seconds. When I do that, I will usually take my phone and I'll set the timer. I'm going to give you 90 seconds to think about the class that you plan to teach in the fall. Think about what you want to accomplish with your class in terms of student engagement and type it into the chat. I'm not actually going to do this because I want to keep us rolling on right now in terms of time. But think about this, because I would actually, if I'm doing this with the class, I'd figure out how much time, I would tell them, note even along the way today, I've said, I'm going to take this much time. I'll do this. I'm going to go get a drink of water, bye. And I will shut my camera off or, close down the little window over my camera. And I just made it your silence. It's your job to fill it, and I've told you what you're going to fill it with. Now the students know that they have a job to do, they have an amount of time for doing it, and they are going to be able to take that silence and do something with it. But you have to address the ownership of silence. Otherwise, it is always going to be your silence as an instructor. And if you've seen the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off and you have that instructor asking the questions, not getting a reply from the students, he's like, anyone? Anyone? Well, he didn't actually give the silence to the students formally and let them sit with it. And sometimes you have to do it. And it gets uncomfortable. But that's where these devices like, look, 90 seconds, there you go. And you know it's yours, so you have to do something with it. It's also important that we think about engagement in terms of framing an overall discussion and that we do it at different levels. We have to think at the course level, like, why are you here and why are these other people here? What is our whole raison d'etre? Because that's going to frame everything that we continue to do. Then if we ask our students to engage in discussion, whether it's synchronous or asynchronous, they need to think about what's required, what's the outcome of this. Sometimes I have to tell students, I'm asking you to discuss because this is your practice opportunity with articulation and reflection. See, I'm going back to the cognitive apprenticeship model. You can read stuff and think that you understood it, but until you've practiced articulating it, you don't know for sure that you really have mastered it. It's that where your stumbling block is going to come in. And I want you to know that now rather than 2 days before the paper is due or the night before the test. So, you know, that's why we do this. And then within each exchange that we have, you know, what are you saying and what am I replying? What's even appropriate for us to do? So it's down to this level. When I said you set the expectations as a instructor for what the students are going to do, it's telling them and supporting and scaffolding and modeling it down to that level of the exchange. But it is important that we, you know, that big class community, why are we here? Get it down to the discussion level. What's this all about? And what's the purpose of discussion? And then down to each exchange. And what is the purpose of that going to be? If you have a reason for that as the instructor, which you should, if you have a reason for that, then you should be able to tell your students about it. And when they understand that, then they're going to buy in and participate more. You also have to think here about the audience. Who do you want your students to be talking to? Are they talking to you? Are they just speaking out a message to this wide audience of whoever it happens to be? Or are they supposed to be engaged in a discussion with these concrete other people in their class? Not just broadcast, not just message posting. A lot of what we do in a discussion tool ends up being this broadcast message posting. And I don't want my students message posting. I want my students discussing. And that looks very different. But again, it's a mind shift that we have to help our students with. You know, so with that in mind, I see people putting up prompts like this all the time for their students. And it works great in the classroom, the face-to-face classroom. It doesn't work online. Right? So what are the three main points of this week's readings? What's wrong with this? How do we make it better? Tell me. Put something in the chat for me. All right, I'm going to give you all, you give you 60 seconds of silence. Think about it and put it in the chat. All right, I'm seeing all the right answers coming up here in the chat. It's, I mean, it's really general. It's at the level of what they read. We're not asking them to go in any deeper. Note that there's no direction given here. There's no, like, what are you supposed to actually do with this? And once you've said it, because it's going to get redundant really fast, isn't it? Once you've said what the three main points are in the reading, like, you know, done, mic drop, I'm out of here. Am I supposed to come back and respond to somebody else? None of that is in here. And so instructors who put up prompts like this get like the literal answer to the question that they asked, and that's it. The students walk away from it. I've had instructors say in the past, like, I stopped doing discussions in my class because my students didn't really say much of anything. They didn't discuss, so it wasn't worth it. And, you know, we can make this better by, you know, asking students to relate it to something else, asking students to go find unique examples that relate back to one, or exemplify one of the main points in this week's readings, you know, connecting it in any way they can with other things. We need to tell them how they're supposed to interact with different people. We can do role play and ask people to try to be, you know, a devil's advocate on something. There are so many ways of doing this, but you have to really think your way around it. I always say when you put a discussion prompt out, ask yourself how you would respond to that same prompt and whether or not you would be interested in reading and responding to what anybody else had to say about that prompt. So I know we're about out of time and I want to try to get things wrapped up here. I want to give you a few final reminders today, which are that whatever you model as an instructor will be mirrored. And it is really important what you do right at the beginning of the class. It will set the tone for the whole semester. I find when I teach online, like the first week is the hardest. The second week is also pretty difficult. I feel like I need to be everywhere communicating with everybody and making all of these connections. And then things happen. Like week 8 or 9, I can kind of drift off and not be there, because if I did my job right, everybody is interacting with everybody else and they don't need me anymore. The class has gelled as a community and it takes off and largely does its own thing. And of course, all of my activities are planned and they have clear directions and expectations for how everybody is going to interact. We're familiar with the tools that we're going to use. We're familiar with the expectations in the class. We have this shared value of interacting, and it's just going to flow from there. That class culture that we set up is so important, because the students will show up to class when they know you're going to miss them. If they know that you're dependent on them to be posting in the forums and doing all that, that's when they're going to do it. When they know that it's okay and they're in a safe space, even if they feel uncertain about posting, when they know that you're not going to come out and say, "Wrong, Julie, you're the only person in class who couldn't get the right answer to this," but instead you're going to have very gentle ways of redirecting them and helping them. You say, not quite, but actually what you posted is exactly what a lot of people think, that they're going to feel okay with taking risks in there. When they know that you value their performance, they're going to give it to you. And it flips around to your own benefit, and that when they know you care and you're doing your best, when you're overwhelmed, when you're having a weak moment, they're going to forgive you for that. And they're still going to see you for the wonderful instructor you are the rest of the time when you're at the top of your game. So as I wrap this up, I want you to always keep in mind this idea that the people and those connections and knowing what they're supposed to do and knowing they're in a safe space and they have a shared mission and values, that's going to be the most important part of your class when you're teaching remotely. The content, thinking about how you're going to deliver it, there are so many ways to deliver content. We can make that stuff happen. We can get the content from elsewhere. That's really not something to worry about. And the technology, just use it to the extent that you need to foster the kinds of communication and interactions that you want to have in your class. You don't need to be wowing people with your technological skills. Just do what you can and get that part under control. So with that, I am done with my speaking here, but I'm happy to stick around and answer any questions. I've put my contact information up there. I plan to continue to be posting things over the summer as time allows, especially now that I've got my summer classes up and running, to my blog with more tips for teaching online. I also put up some information about my program. I saw that I got a question or got a response about my fall class on online pedagogy and course design on the Flipgrid introductions. And that'll be a course from my program, Instructional Systems and Learning Technologies. We have a lot of people who come over and get a master's degree with us while they're getting a degree elsewhere, do one of our grad certificates, because layering all this teaching stuff on top of your other areas of expertise can be useful. So I thank you so much for spending some of your Friday with me. And if you've got some questions, please ask away. I'll stick around. The certificates, they're 5-course certificates. So it's your straight up credit hour experience for our graduate certificates. If you want any information about them, you can feel free to email me and I can connect you in with that.